From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Oh boy, my voice is cracking. Yeah, it is definitely cracking, folks. I am still trying to get over this cold of mine. I have a severe sore throat, so I need you all out there to please just stick with me throughout the next 60 minutes, all right? But you are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a great show in store for each and every one of our listeners out there. On today's show, we will talk about the Detroit Lions. That's right. It was such a jam-packed show yesterday that we did not get a chance to fully recap what took place for the Honolulu Blue in the first exhibition matchup of the year as the Lions hit the road to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Lions would win that first preseason game. They had preseason game number two taking place on Thursday at home against Cincinnati. But I'm going to give you a few names who I thought really stood out in game one on Friday against Pittsburgh. So don't miss that. We, of course, will have an Olympic update for all of you guys. If you did not get a chance to catch what took place out in Rio de Janeiro yesterday, yeah, it was a fun-filled day, as it always is, all right? And we'll, of course, preview what to look forward to as the day proceeds. And hey, the Michigan State football team continues to prepare for the opening game against Furman on September 2nd. And we will talk about Michigan State in its first scrimmage. That took place on Saturday, the defense topping the offense. And we will invite Kyle Austin, Michigan State beat writer for MLive.com, to talk about his thoughts and predictions on Mark D'Antonio's team. So all of that and so much more. You know that number if you want to be a part of today's show. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or you can even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. But without further ado, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, it's a big day for all of you Michigan State football fans out there. Michigan State's football program is hosting its 14th annual Meet the Spartans event this evening at Spartan Stadium. Fans are invited to meet MSU's football players and head coach Mark D'Antonio. To get an autograph from those players and Coach D, visit the Spartan Stadium playing field as well as the press box where media members like myself do work while you guys are enjoying the game in the stands, all right? You can also take photos wearing a Spartan helmet, shoulder pads, and jersey, and you can meet the one, the only, the greatest mascot in all the land, Sparty, and pose for photos with the mascot. Now, the event runs from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Offensive players will be available for autographs from 5:30 to 6:30. Defensive players and Coach D will sign autographs from 6:30 to 7:30. So head on out this evening at Spartan Stadium. It should be a grand old time. All right, two of three Michigan freshmen who are not present at the official team photo earlier this month are currently serving suspensions. That's per Coach Jim Harbaugh. As specifically if receiver Amir Mitchell, running back Kareem Walker, and redshirt freshman defensive lineman Shelton Johnston, who all missed the team's photograph, are still on the team, Harbaugh was not pleased with the question. He replied that two of those players were currently out with a suspension. He did not provide names, though. Asked later how long the aforementioned two players would be out, Harbaugh declined to answer, ending his interview shortly after that. He had this to say, quote, "That's why I don't give you any information, because you're never satisfied. You always want a second, a third, a fourth question. I just said we'd handle it internally. Thank you," end quote. Yeah, we'll have more on that story in just a minute. All right, the U.S. Amateur Golf Championship is taking place all week, concluding on Sunday here in Michigan at Oakland Hills. Many of the greats of the game have won this long-standing tourney, from Bobby Jones, who won it 5 times, to Arnold Palmer, no, not the drink, to Jack Nicklaus twice, to Phil Mickelson to Tiger Woods, who won it 3 times. This is just the second time the tourney has been played at Oakland Hills. The first was in 2002 when Ricky Barnes bested Hunter Mahan in the final match play, 2-1. All right, Ian Kennedy continued his second half resurgence with 6 2/3 innings of one-run ball, allowing Raul Modesi's RBI bunt single and Lorenzo Cain's 9th-inning RBI single to send the Kansas City Royals to a 3-1 victory over the Detroit Tigers last night at Comerica Park. Now, the Tigers, who sustained a major loss to their lineup mid-game, get this, Miguel Cabrera exited with a left bicep strain, suffered a real loss on the right arm of Kennedy, who tossed his 4th consecutive outing of 6 or more innings and 1 run or fewer allowed. J.D. Martinez's 16th homer was the lone run off of Kennedy, whose other 4 hits allowed were all ground ball singles. Now, Justin Verlander will get the nod tonight in Game 2 against KC. The Tigers sit 5 games in back of first place Cleveland in the American League Central and 2.5 games in back of a potential wild card berth. Get this, the Chicago Cubs apologized on Monday for an incident in which an employee played a song that was just not suitable for anybody's ears. As closer, Adrolis Chapman walked off the mound after the 9th inning on Sunday. After initially saying that the song was played unintentionally, the team announced that the employee who played the song was fired due to lack of judgment. Chapman served a 30-game suspension as a member of the New York Yankees at the beginning of the season, and he was accused of choking his girlfriend and firing 8 bullets in his garage. He was not arrested, and charges were not filed. All right, the Detroit Lions removed linebacker DeAndre Levy from the non-football injury list today. Levy, who has not practiced with the team all of training camp because of an injury he suffered this summer, is expected to practice when the team takes the field at 2 p.m. today. Levy played just 17 snaps last year because of a preseason hip injury he suffered a few weeks ago after signing a 4-year, $33.8 million contract extension. It must be nice. The Lions hit the field for the preseason game number 2 against the Cincinnati Bengals. That's right, the return of former Current Sports intern Darian Harris. Yeah, Darian's with the Bengals now. That will take place Thursday at home for the Lions. The NFL will suspend indefinitely the 4 active players at the center of the league's performance-enhancing drug probe if they do not provide interviews to the league by August 25th. Now, Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison, Green Bay Packers linebackers Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, and free agent linebacker Mike Neal will be suspended beginning August 26th if they have not cooperated. And get this very cool story. Jeff Blashill, entering his 2nd season as the Detroit Red Wings head coach, will serve as Grand Marshal for NASCAR's Pure Michigan 400 on August 28th at Michigan International Speedway in BK, Brooklyn. Red Wings forward Dylan Larkin served as Grand Marshal for the Detroit Belle Isle Grand Prix in June. Nicholas Cronwall, Chris Osgood, and Jimmy Howard have previously served as NASCAR Grand Marshals for Michigan Sprint's Cup races. The race, the NASCAR's Pure Michigan 400, will take place at 2 p.m. on August 28th. And last but not least, in a wide-ranging interview with GQ, Carolina Panthers quarterback Cam Newton told the magazine he doesn't think he is subjected to extra scrutiny because he is black. Quote, it's not racism, Newton told GQ. Quote, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Looking forward to reading that article. All right, well, that wraps up your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. If you want to weigh in on anything that happens to be on your sports noggin. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Big third down now, and they are 11 for 17 on third down. Keith Butler won't like those numbers. He goes to Jace Billingsley, who cuts back the other way. Billingsley, another cut, gets into the end zone for a beautiful meandering touchdown.
Right the blitz off. You see 38 coming off the hot side. 16 read it, cut back, another missed tackle. I just mentioned that earlier in his drive.
All right, Steelers kick off. And a nice return right there. And return is on, and it looks like Dwayne Washington is going to go the distance. He took it, he got a block, he made a play, and he's gone. Dwayne Washington goes the distance. This year's seventh round pick, 96 yards to the house. Danny Smith won't like that.
Just a simple return to the right there. Look at that hole, that's just huge. I mean, you can't ask Boswell to make that tackle. They know as a returner, that's the man that's gonna be unblocked. Unfortunately, he missed it, and there you go, 97 yards for a touchdown.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and again, folks, I'm asking you to bear with me throughout this hour because I am still battling this summer cold of mine. Yeah, you can kind of hear it in my voice, a little bit raspy. Hurts just a little bit, and I should be sitting here drinking a hot cup of tea, but you guys know I love my coffee. Hey, coffee's still hot, all right? So it kind of fits in that, it's still helping me a little bit, but I should be sipping tea, I know that, but I can't. I have like a thing. I don't know if many of you guys noticed, but I have a thing. Before I do every show, I have to have a cup of coffee. Isaac knows this. I have to have a cup of coffee and a banana before every single show, or else I just feel off, all right? You get a bad show if that doesn't happen. So, but I'm fighting it, man. I know, Isaac, you're still trying to battle yours as well.
Can't help y'all too much, yeah.
I think maybe we got each other sick. That's what I'm trying to figure out here. Maybe so. I don't know. Because
it's a good hypothesis, yeah.
Right? Because we're on the air every single day with each other. And, hey, just do the math. But, hey, we're going to get through this hour. We have a great show, though. A great show in store for all of you guys out there. As I mentioned, our guest for today's show will be Kyle Austin. For the first time, this is the first time that Kyle is going to be a part of the show. He's been a beat writer for Michigan State now, I believe, at least 2 years. Don't quote me on that, but I believe at least 2 years. I think this will be his third year now. Kyle does a fantastic job. I've been a fan of his work and followed his work for quite some time. I see him every single time I go and cover a Michigan State football event and a Michigan State basketball event. He's always there. So Kyle Austin of MLive.com will join us to talk about his takeaways from Michigan State training camp and his thoughts on how this team will be going into the next year. Does he see a foreseeable Big Ten championship and beyond for Coach D's team, or will we see a step back for this team looking at the turnover from last year going into this year? So we will chat with Kyle Austin about that and so much more. But, hey, I want to start with, of course, the Detroit Lions. We didn't get a chance to elaborate on the Detroit Lions yesterday. Of course, the Lions had their very first preseason game on Friday night on the road against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I want to preface this conversation with this. Again, it's preseason, folks. So you can't read a lot into how this team will be going into the regular season. You just can't. It's preseason. It's like an exhibition for, you know, Michigan State football. You know, it's like a scrimmage, basically, okay? You can't. So it amazes me how, and I think just people get kind of just enthralled in it because football is back and the Lions are back on television, because my cousin texted me and, you know, the game was on and I was actually in it because I had to go to a wedding this past weekend for my fraternity brother. And I was on the road listening to the entire game on my radio. And, you know, when the Lions, you know, started to really pull away from Pittsburgh late in that game, I mean, how about Jake Rudock, former Michigan quarterback? I mean, Jake, wow, he looked great, didn't he? Dwayne Washington had, as you heard, that 96-yard, you know, touchdown kick return. That was pretty cool. And I got a text immediately from my cousin after the game, and he said, wow, the Lions are going to be great this year. And I'm like, hold on, cuz. It's preseason, dog. Let's slow it. Let's pump the brakes. just a little bit here. It's preseason football. We don't know how this team will look. With Matthew Stafford probably only played like 5 snaps, all right? But what the preseason does allow you to do is you get to see guys who are fighting for a roster spot for that 53-man roster at the end of the year, before the regular season starts. And you have a lot of guys who may be third and fourth string guys. They're going 100% because this is their livelihood. You know, they could make a roster spot and earn some moolah this year. All right. They're trying to fight for a spot. So when it comes to me, what I really look at is, you know, just surprise players who could really turn some heads and make an unexpected stamp for this Detroit Lions team, or any professional team for that matter, because I like watching preseason football off and on, not just the Lions, but also, hey, my Cowboys as well, and other teams throughout the league. I'm glued to my TV multiple times on the NFL Network, just seeing what talent could really, who's the next name? Who's the next big name in football here? And so I kind of want to go through what I saw. You know, again, I listened to it on Sirius XM Radio, and then I went home later on that night, and I started to watch the highlights and really look at the numbers and examine, you know, who really impressed, you know, the Lions coaching staff and who we could see moving forward here as preseason game number 2 takes place on Thursday against the Cincinnati Bengals, who could really capitalize moving forward and really help their respective stock and who could really possibly, you know, sign a check with the Lions this upcoming year, a person that we didn't expect. So I have a few names here I want to throw out. The first one is a guy that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, those who followed the Lions last year, particularly throughout the preseason. He was a name you heard left and right. He was a guy that clearly turned heads, and justifiably so. His name is Zach Zinner. Now, he was the NFL's leading rusher, actually, in the preseason last year. Zinner, he had 7 carries for 24 yards and 3 catches for 32 yards while playing most of the first half. So Zinner continues to pick up where he left off last year in preseason camp. All right? It was great. He had a solid outing against the Pittsburgh Steelers on Friday. He was the second running back in ahead of Stevon Ridley, and he made the most of his time. He gained 12 yards in the first carry. He split 2 defenders. And by the way, the Pittsburgh Steelers, looking back at those highlights, the Pittsburgh Steelers' tackling was absolutely awful. Awful. And I know Mike Tomlin had to be just fuming at his guys after that game. I mean, there were so many missed tackles. I like to see the stats on that, how many missed tackles for the Pittsburgh Steelers there were, because guys just couldn't wrap up. They were certainly in preseason form. I'll say that. Okay, I probably could have broke a tackle or two on Friday night. But Stevon Ridley, you know, he made the most of his time. Again, he gained 12 yards on his first carry, split 2 defenders to pick up a first down, and made a nice block on a blitzing defender. That was really nice. So you know, you look at Zinner. You know, Ridley looked very well as well. And I'm really looking forward to seeing if Zinner, because I do think Zinner will be signed with this team going to next year. I think he's constantly, you know, proved himself now in back-to-back years. Again, it's only the first game of preseason camp, but he's off to a great start. I think Zinner somehow, some way, finds a spot on this team going into the regular season. I don't know. Also, Dwayne Washington. I mean, how impressive was that? Dwayne Washington just turned on the Jets. Again, Zinner, he wasn't the only running back who had a big game. Washington, who was the Lions' 7th round pick, if you remember, out of Washington, showed his speed, showed some elusiveness, you know, and then goes, 96 yards for a touchdown. He also made 2 defenders miss, just like everybody did that night, on a short pass that turned into a 15-yard gain. And he was pretty productive in running the ball as well. So Dwayne Washington, it looks like Bob Quinn, Jim Caldwell, and company, they made a good decision in drafting that young man. So we'll see if he can carry that on to game 2 and throughout preseason camp. And we could see a deal made with Washington as well. Graham Glasgow, excuse me. You know, now he worked with the second team, actually, on the offensive line at center, right ahead of Gabe Ikar. Now, you look at what Graham was able to do, though. You know, the rookie, he showed some power to me, and he showed some athleticism, you know, and opening up things for that run game for those running backs. And I really believe that Graham could push for a starting job later on this year. I think he improved his stock. I really like what Graham was able to do throughout that game. How about Dan Orlovsky? You know, when you look at the quarterback situation, the Lions need a solid backup for Matthew Stafford. And the reason why I say this is because you just don't know what's going to happen. Any starting quarterback in the NFL needs a solid backup because the game is so physical and we see crazy things happen throughout an NFL year. Heck, just ask me as a Cowboys fan what I've been going through the last 2 years when it comes to Tony Romo being made of glass and having back-to-back years of collarbone injuries. I mean, you need a solid backup. You know, if injuries occur, if Matt just isn't getting it done in a game. And Dan Orlovsky, you know, I think he's going to be the guy. I think he solidified himself as that guy, and he solidified that notion from what he was able to do on Friday night. He wasn't his sharpest all the time. He completed, though, 16 of 25 passes for 164 yards. He had one ugly interception, though. Yeah, he threw the ball to my grandmother, I think, after avoiding a sack and nearly had two other picks. He was not great, but look at 16 of 25 with 164 yards. I think Dan can come in and hold down the fort to some degree if something was to happen to Matthew Stafford. Also, Jeremy Curley, TJ Jones, none of the Lions' second string receivers did much to really stand out on Friday. Curley, man, he dropped a third down. It would have been a third down conversion. And Jones had one catch for minus 1 yard. I was not impressed with those two. Andre Roberts was probably the best out of all of them, to be honest with you. He had a solid punt return, caught a touchdown. And how about undrafted rookie Jace Billingsley? He played with the third team offense. He also had a pretty solid day. Had a 27-yard touchdown catch from Jake Rudock in the fourth quarter. So those were a few names that really just stood out to me, you know, for various reasons that I just broke down. Again, it's only game one of preseason camp, okay? And you can't read too much into it because you better believe the Steelers did not have any starting personnel out there. I mean, you're going against guys who are competing for a starting gig or just some kind of gig in the NFL. You don't have your starters out there. You don't have the best of every single team competing out there. So I don't put too much weight on it, but, you know, you can always see talent, you know? And I think a few guys like Zinner, like Washington, those are guys that are just talented players and can make an impact on this team moving forward. I really believe that. And how about Jake Rudock? Again, you know, this is a rookie 6th-round draft pick from Michigan. He looked very unrookie-like. I'll tell you that. Jake Rudock, look, just to steal a line from my journalistic idol, Stuart Scott, he was as cool as the other side of the pillow. That's what Jake Rudock looked like to me out there. He didn't get rattled, you know, being out there on the big NFL stage. He was very, you know, composed. He played 27 snaps. He was 8 of 11 for 72 yards with a touchdown pass to Jace Billingsley. He also scrambled well with a long run of 17 yards. And it's so crazy. I was listening to that game, Isaac, on Sirius XM, and they feed in, you know, the in-house of whatever team, you know what I mean? Whether it be the Lions or the Steelers. And they actually fed in the in-house play-by-play guys of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And there were three of them. And I'm listening to it on the radio, and they kept saying, you know, and Jake Rudock, he moves the ball now in 1st and 10. I'm saying, Jake Rudock, who is that? I don't remember that guy playing quarterback for the Lions. And they just kept saying, oh, Jake Rudock with another great pass. And I'm sitting there saying, what? Who? You mean what, Theo Rudock or something? Who are you talking about here? And all of a sudden, you know, when Rudock throws that touchdown pass to Billingsley, all of a sudden they realize they had been pronouncing his name wrong the entire time. And they say, hold on, sorry, that's Rudock. They did it, Isaac, for at least, I want to say, about 20 to 25 minutes. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, who is Jake Rudock? I just don't know who that is. But, you know, I guess they're in preseason form as well, right, as the season is still trying to get underway here. But from what Jake Rudock was able to do And, you know, I'm reading, I see an article here. This is from the Detroit Free Press, Carlo Manares, free beat writer of the Lions for the Free Press. He wrote an article, quote, is Jake Rudock, not Riddick, the Lions QB of the future? And I think that's a legit question to ask because I will say this, and I'm not trying to make the headlines here and make this outlandish statement that, hey, Rudock could take Stafford's job right now. I'm not trying to stir any pot here. But what I am saying is, if you are an NFL GM, if you are an NFL head coach in the league, you are always thinking about the future of your team, more so for the GMs than the coaches. They're worried about game after, you know, week by week here. But the GMs are always looking down the pipe to make sure that that you sustain success. And I think that, you know, Bob Quinn comes from a system out in New England where they clearly have done that. That's what makes them one of the best programs in NFL history. And when you look at a guy like Jake Rudock and what he was able to do in that first game, you saw, again, it's only one game out of the exhibition year. But what you saw was a lot of poise and a lot of positive things that you can build upon that would ask that question, that would warrant that question. Is Jake Rudock the Lions quarterback of the future? And I will say this as well. This is a do or die year, I think, for Matthew Stafford. Because Matthew Stafford no longer now has the greatest cop-out receiver in the history of the game in Calvin Megatron Johnson. No longer, if Stafford gets in a bind and, you know, and if that offensive line is breaking down and he's got to scramble and make something happen, no longer can he just chuck it up the field 80 yards, you know, 50 to 80 yards to Calvin Megatron Johnson, and Megatron is going to jump up, you know, out of a heap of four opposing players and score. No longer is that going to happen. Matthew is going to have to now spread the football around and really work with what he's been given, which is a nice pot, to be honest with you. I like Bolden. I love Golden Tate. Love those guys. He has a lot of talent. If Matthew Stafford does not get the job done this year, it could open a huge can of bad worms. I will say that. Matthew Stafford has a lot of pressure on him. I will say that. But looking at Orlovsky and Rudock, I was impressed with the exception of the mindless interception that Orlovsky threw. I think that Orlovsky's going to be a solid number two, but watch out for Jake Rudock.
Well, Orlovsky's, you know, a veteran of this league. You know what he's getting. He's the safe pick for the job, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's what you want from a backup QB. I'd go as far to say that he's a top 10 backup QB in the league, and that means absolutely nothing unless the starter gets injured. But that's safe. Jake Rudock, what makes him good is he's safe. He's composed. He's experienced, and he knows what he's got, and more importantly, he knows what he doesn't have for a rookie quarterback. That's so important. We saw him show that sort of poise at Michigan. He never really tried to do too much, and that's what I saw from him, actually, when I was at the game Friday night. I was in Pittsburgh for the weekend.
I had no idea you were at the game.
Yeah.
Whoa. You're just now telling me this? That's crazy.
Yeah, I sent out a Snapchat, and I said, you know, it kind of feels like I'm working this since this is the Lions. Might have to put down on the timesheet, just kidding. But no, I was watching the game. Great stadium, great atmosphere. But it was clear that Jake Rudock knew what he was doing. He stepped in, he filled in well. And of course, when he played, he was going in against the third string defenders as well. But at the same time, going 8 of 11 is an accomplishment. It really is. No matter how much defense there is, it takes something to throw the ball accurately enough to connect 8 times out of 11 with a collapsing pocket, with receivers who might not exactly be on the same page as you. They're not used to running those routes. I thought he looked really good. And you mentioned 6th round draft pick out of Michigan. That hadn't worked out too bad in the past.
No, not at all. And you got to give a lot of credit to Jim Harbaugh. Because I think Jim Harbaugh, I think he's a fantastic coach, and especially when it comes to quarterbacks, he knows how to develop QBs. Over time, as that year went on for Michigan, Rudock did. I got to be honest, I always go back to this story. Rudock did not impress me when he first became the starting guy for U of M last
3
year.
3 INTs against Utah, I think.
Exactly. I was sitting there saying, I don't know if he's the guy. But week after week after week, Rudock got better. And by the end of the year, I mean, he was a pretty solid quarterback, to be honest with you. And again, Rudock was mostly playing against the Steelers' third-string defense. But at the same time, what you're looking for with a rookie quarterback in his first NFL game, be it an exhibition at that, but still in his first NFL game, you're looking to see emotionally how well he keeps those emotions in check. If he's awed by the moment and curls up like a turtle in his shell, or if he goes out there and treats it like any other game and just does his thing, how comfortable is he in that moment? I thought Rudock was fit very, very well, to be honest.
Well, and these are games for you and I and the average fan where you kind of put the snooze button on. These are the highest pressure moments for backups. This is them fighting for their jobs, fighting for positions, fighting for contracts. So this isn't a nothing throwaway game. This isn't something where you can say, oh, it's just a scrimmage. These are things where you really can glean a little bit of information.
So I want to know, folks, what do you think of the Detroit Lions moving forward again? What were your takeaways from preseason game number one on Friday against the Pittsburgh Steelers? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Later on in the hour, we'll have a Tickle Tuesday for you, as well as an Olympic update. Some controversy last night that we'll talk about concerning Allyson Felix, who now becomes the most decorated woman in U.S. track and field history, I think in track and field history, period, across the board, not just in the United States. So we'll talk about the dive. That's what everybody's is dubbing it now, the dive from last night. And we'll give you an Olympic update on what to look forward to as the day proceeds. That and more after the break. We'll chat with Kyle Austin, MSU beat writer for MLive.com. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We now transition into some MSU football talk. And again, for all of the Michigan State College football fans out there, fans are invited to meet MSU's football players and coach, Mark D'Antonio, this evening to get an autograph. You can visit Spartan Stadium's playing field and press box. You can take photos wearing a Spartan helmet, shoulder pads, and jersey. Heck, even Sparty will be in the house, all right? Now, the event will run from 5 to 8 p.m. tonight. Offensive players will be available for autographs from 5:30 to 6:30. Defensive players and Coach D will sign autographs from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. So head out to Spartan Stadium tonight. Again, the 14th annual Meet the Spartans event this evening at Spartan Stadium. Now, when looking at the logistics of this team, of course, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, the defense topped the offense 26-17 in the first jersey scrimmage of preseason camp on Saturday at Spartan Stadium. Now, the scrimmage, which utilizes a modified scoring system, was 137 plays long, lasted about 2.5 hours under cloudy skies, a few light rain showers, and temperatures in the high 70s. So, moving forward now to training camp, as this team counts down the days until that September 2nd opening game matchup against Furman, we now invite a man who knows a thing or two about this squad. His name is Kyle Austin, Michigan State beat writer for MLive.com. The first time we've ever had Kyle on the show, that's a crime in itself. Kyle, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, my man?
Good, Al. How are we doing?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Now, first off, Kyle, before we talk about and really dive into the logistics of this team, I want to go to an article that you just wrote concerning former Nebraska defensive lineman graduate transfer Kevin Williams. You got a chance to chat with Kevin, and he opened up as to his decision to now become a Spartan. What did he have to say concerning why he made this decision?
You know, it's pretty interesting because Michigan State doesn't have a whole lot of graduate transfer guys. So, and he played in Nebraska, so he's a guy that was there for 5 years and played Michigan State five times. So to me, the most interesting comment he made is he said, you know, people develop a certain perception about these teams that you're playing, and Michigan State's perception is always that, hey, those are some tough guys. They come to play. Their offensive and defensive lines are very, very big, physical, and tough to play against. And he said that once he got here, it was pretty much exactly what he thought. You know, there was no surprise. He called Michigan State players some tough SOBs. In his words, and that's what he wanted. You know, his high school recruiting battle came down to Michigan State and Nebraska, and it sounded like his respect and his admiration for Michigan State just kind of continued and grew throughout those 5 years of playing against them. And now he's here. He's a veteran guy. He's learning the system, but I think he's helping out a lot given that he's got 5 years of college football experience. So I think it'll be a good situation for him.
Yeah, certainly. And before Coach D opened practice yesterday, he talked with the media and mentioned, you know, he talked specifically about the depth chart. And he mentioned yesterday how there are a lot of moving pieces on that defensive line. Kyle, how do you think this DL will look come the season start?
Yeah, you know, it's probably the most interesting position to watch right now because I think there is the most potential for movement and surprises. Really, the only known at this point is that obviously Malik McDowell will be out there as a starter. Obviously, that's a given. As far as other likely guys, I think Demetrius Cooper, you know, it would be pretty shocking not to see him out there as a starter. He's the guy, you know, played last 2 years behind Shalik Calhoun. Got 5 sacks last year, kind of a breakout role. So I think he's a good bet for one of the defensive end positions. Raekwon Williams is another name to watch. He's a defensive tackle. He's a redshirt freshman, so he's never been out there, but he's really impressed with his size and his strength. I think I would put the other defensive tackle position kind of between him and Kevin Williams right now. I think those are the two main guys, and no matter who starts, I think we're going to see a lot of both of those guys, the redshirt freshman and the sixth-year graduate transfer.
Now, Kyle,
for the other defensive end spot,
yeah.
You're looking at guys like Gabe Sherrod, who came in, he's their other graduate transfer from Delaware State. Kind of raw, but a lot of speed, a lot of natural ability, so I think he's improving. Evan Jones is a fifth-year guy we haven't seen a whole lot of, but he's been in the program for a long time. He kind of worked his way up, and I think he'd be a steady option there if they decide to go that way. So, yeah, I just gave you 6-7 names. It wouldn't be surprising for me to see any of those guys starting. So a lot of work to do there in the last couple weeks of camp.
Yeah, a lot of evaluation to say the least. And you mentioned Malik McDowell. He's certainly a household name for this Michigan State football team. And he made a statement at Media Day that if he's not a top three NFL draft pick, he will not be leaving after this year. How good can McDowell be? And where can you see his game improve at this upcoming year?
I mean, he can be as good as any defensive lineman in the country. He's got that natural ability, and that's what people have seen and talked about going back to his days at playing high school ball in this state. I think the way he can improve is his consistency, you know, his motor, which is something we talk about with a lot of big guys. I think that got better last year, but I think it could get even better this year. And the other thing, and this is kind of a challenge to him, is he's going to be the focal point as far as what opposing offensive lines key in on. You know, last year he had Shirley Calhoun on the line with him. He had Lawrence Thomas on the other end. He had a lot of veteran and very talented guys. So I don't think that opponents could really key in on one guy. This year, as we just talked about, there's a lot of new faces. There's a lot of question marks and unproven guys alongside him. So I think the worry is that teams are going to double Malik McDowell constantly, and they're going to give him a lot of attention and try to frustrate him. So I think how he can grow is to learn how to work through double teams, how to eat up two defenders and free somebody else up, or even maybe move to the outside and try to get a one-on-one matchup and act more like a defensive end. So I think he'll have to get creative. I think he'll have to be smart about how he plays it, but there's a lot of potential there for sure.
Yeah, to say the least. Again, folks, if you are just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Kyle Austin of MLive.com. Now, Kyle, you mentioned question marks. What are your biggest question marks for this team going into this new year?
You know, we haven't talked about quarterbacks yet. It's still somewhat of a question mark. I'll put it as a small question mark, not a big one, because I think I'm like everybody else, just kind of waiting for Tyler O'Connor to be named that job. But it hasn't happened yet for a reason. You know, they're still evaluating.
Yep.
So that could happen. I think my bigger question mark there might be who's the second guy or the first guy off the bench, the second quarterback, because Brian Lewerke is a guy that's impressed a lot. Not taking anything away from Damian Terrier, but he's a younger guy. He's a potential future starter. So I think if you're looking long term, I'm wondering if they look at this year as a year to try to get Brian Lewerke work in there a little bit, if the score is such that you can get him in there. And kind of look towards the future and try to groom him a little bit more. I think he's shown every indication that he can be that guy in the future. As far as other positions, you know, offensive line, they're replacing three guys there. I think there's question marks. They're going to have two new tackles. So obviously you're replacing Jack Conklin there, and you're wondering if bringing in a new quarterback, are those guys going to be able to provide the protection necessary, so Tyler O'Connor can work his way in there and kind of keep improving. Running backs are still a three-man battle, but I think they're pretty good there. And that's about it. I think the defense is solid. I don't think there's a whole lot of question marks there. We talked about the line, but I think their linebackers are the best unit, and the defensive backs, they got a lot of experience back, a lot of guys that have been up and down, but I think a lot of guys with potential. So I think the defense is good. I think more of my questions are with the offense.
Yeah, and you mentioned the quarterbacks. That was my next question, Kyle. Again, I feel like I'm like you and many people out there. We're just waiting on, you know, the announcement from Coach D to say, yeah, Tyler is our guy. What has separated Tyler O'Connor from the rest of the pack, you think, throughout training camp so far?
I really just think it's his experience, not just his experience, but, you know, he knows this playbook. This is not like Michigan State is, you know, choosing between a redshirt freshman and a true freshman like some programs are. You know, he's a guy that was willing to stick around with Michigan State 2 or 3 years of kind of Cook starting, knowing that he'd be coming off the bench. And that's a situation where in today's age, you see a lot of guys transferring to try to get on the field sooner. But the fact that he waited it out means that he knows his playbook. He's got very, very good chemistry with his wide receivers. He's a leader. He's well-respected by his teammates. And I think those sorts of things. I mean, Jeremy Kerr is an older guy too, but I don't think he's quite on that level with Tyler O'Connor. And I think he's been a steady option for them. I mean, they're going to be throwing the kind of Cook made that you're not going to see Tyler O'Connor make this year. But I don't think he's going to make a whole lot of mistakes. I think they can have confidence in him that he can be a steady option. And that there's, as far as breaking a new quarterback, I don't think there's a whole lot of question marks where that goes.
Now, I want to bring up a conversation when it comes to the overall conference here, Kyle. Do you like the Big Ten moving to 9 conference games this year?
I do, because I think that it's the way college football is going, and I think it all comes down to the college football playoff. Mm-hmm. And you, as a conference, you need to be maximizing your conference champions' chances of getting one of those 4 playoff spots. As long as there's going to be 5 power conferences and 4 playoff spots, you need to be doing everything you can. And I think the playoff committee has proven that they're going to take strength of schedule very seriously. And if they're choosing between 2 conference champions, that could end up being the deciding factor. So you add that 9th conference game, you're automatically upping everybody in the conference's strength of schedule factor. And if we come down to December when they're making this decision, and if there's a 2-loss Michigan or a 2-loss Big Ten champion versus another 2-loss conference champion, that's from the ACC or whatever it could be, that's something that could come into play there. So I think they're kind of getting ahead of the curve here. I think within a couple of years, we'll see every conference doing this, and they're putting themselves in position to not get left out of that playoff.
Yeah, it's all about that strength of schedule at the end of the year, Kyle. And, you know, when you evaluate Michigan State's schedule this year, you know, it's very interesting looking at how they play Furman, then they have a bye week. Then they have to go on the road to play Notre Dame. Do you like MSU playing Notre Dame so early, let alone coming off a bye week, Kyle?
Yeah, I think if you're going to play them, I think that is the time to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really how the schedule set up the last 2 years with Oregon, when you think about it.
Right, yeah.
I know they had to buy at least one of those 2 years, and obviously I think they showed well in that Oregon series. They almost won out there. They gave them a very good game out there, and then obviously they beat Oregon last year at home. So it's pretty much the same thing. I think they've shown that they can play their best in that situation early in the year and coming off the bye. So I think they feel confident about that. The factor that I don't think has been talked about very much, and I think could be a major issue, is I can't think of a time they've ever had a bye after 1 week of the season. And then you go from there, starting at Notre Dame, you play 11 straight weeks, a game every week with absolutely no break.
Yeah.
It's not like the old days where we have the two byes and you get a break in the middle of the season. 11 straight games. We saw what happened with the injuries last year. If a guy's got a nagging ankle or any sort of injury that's hampering them, there's just not going to be a break there to get healed up. So you have to wonder about, you know, look down the stretch. They've got Ohio State late in the year. They go to Penn State very late in the year. If they lose them to injury, it could be tough going. And a lot of these teams are going to get these breaks during the middle of the year, and Michigan State's not going to have one. So you hope it doesn't come down to injuries like that, but it certainly could be a factor late in the year.
Yeah, knock on wood. That is a very good point, Kyle. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us, we are chatting with Kyle Austin, Michigan State beat writer for MLive.com. Before we get you out of here, Kyle, I want to just put you on the spot for a second here. How do you think the Big Ten is going to stack up? Who's your Big Ten champion? And do you think it's going to go like a lot of the pundits think it's going to go in the Big Ten East when you look at Ohio State, Michigan, and MSU as in that order?
Yeah, you know, I'm still picking Ohio State, and I know how much they lost, but I just think those guys, they're bringing in the best players in the Big Ten every year. They have, to me, the best coach and the best coaching staff in the Big Ten. And I mean, we've seen before where they can just take young guys and bring them up to speed very quickly, and by Big Ten season, have them rolling. I wouldn't be surprised if they go to Oklahoma and lose that non-conference game they have early in the season, like they lost to Virginia Tech, that is, 2 years ago. But I just think they got so much talent there, such good coaching. They're going to be rolling. By the time they're getting ready to play Michigan and Michigan State, which are both very late in the season for them, they're going to have it together, and they're going to be in position to win that Big Ten title, because I think they'll be able to take care of everybody else early on their schedule. Michigan, I like Michigan. They got a lot of guys back, but the fact is they still have to go to Ohio State and to Michigan State this year. And
right.
I just can't pick them to win both those games right now, even how good they're going to be. Michigan State's always going to get up. And Michigan State, I think it's going to be a small step back. I'm picking them at 9-3. I think they'll be third there. I don't think it'll be a bad season by any means, but I think this is the season where the other two guys are a little bit more in position to kind of shoot above them a little bit this year.
All right, my man, Kyle Austin. Kyle, for those that want to read your work, how can they do so? And what do you got cooking for your readers out there?
We're at MLive.com/Spartans for all the Michigan State coverage. And got a nice little mailbag going tomorrow morning. We answer some readers' questions and have some fun with it, so it should be good.
Gotta love that. Kyle, you're doing a great job out there, and thanks so much for taking some time this afternoon to join us.
All right, thanks, Al.
You got it. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will have an Olympic update for you. Also, a brief chat about the Detroit Tigers as they fell to the Kansas City Royals last night, and Tickle Tuesday. That and more in the final 10 minutes right here on WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Just 10 minutes left here on the show. If you want to be a part of our airwaves, again, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We just finished chatting with Kyle Austin, Michigan State beat writer for MLive.com. Quick chat on, of course, the Michigan State football team and how things are progressing for the Spartans throughout training camp as the days count down to that September 2nd opening season matchup against Furman. If you missed that chat, you know that we post each and every show via podcast on our website at WKAR.org. Should be up around 3 o'clock. Check it out if you missed it. All right. Well, 10 minutes left. Of course, the Olympics are underway out in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Let's give you guys a recap on what took place yesterday and what to look forward to today. All right, so what took place out in Rio yesterday, folks? Well, I'll start with Brazil. They have won their second gold medal after Thiago Braz da Silva beat Renaud Lavanin of France in the pole vaulting competition. The United States took bronze. Bahamian Shawnee Miller, a lot of controversy around this moment. She won the gold medal for the women's 400 meter with Allison Felix of the U.S. taking the silver. Jamaica finished out things with the bronze. But yeah, Shawnee Miller, she actually dove across the finish line, and a lot of people were sitting there saying, should that be legal or illegal? We'll have more on that in just a second. Kenya's David Rudisha took the gold medal in the 800-meter race to earn his second gold event. And also, Algeria took the silver with the U.S. taking the bronze in that race as well. Winter rains wreaked havoc with some of the track and field events, but organizers allowed the competition to have a second chance with some of the events. The swimming has concluded, but the solo diving events get underway with the Chinese leading the way in the 3-meter springboard. Mexico and the U.S., they follow in the preliminary events. Germany, Britain, and U.S. and Russia are also in that competition. We'll have details on tomorrow's show concerning that competition. After a slip, get this, U.S. gymnast Simone Biles earned the bronze medal on the balance beam. Yeah, Lori Hernandez ended up taking silver in that one. So the quest for 5 gold medals ended for Biles yesterday. More on Biles in just a second. And in the medal race total right now, the U.S. maintained, after yesterday's events, a large lead with a total of 75 medals. The gold medal count remains at 26. The United Kingdom is in second place with the gold medal count with 16, but China holds second for the overall count with 46 total medals. As far as what to look forward to today, folks, for those who have enjoyed the athletic brilliance of Biles and Ali Raisman over the past 10 days, the Olympic schedule today offers one final opportunity to watch all of the all-around gymnasts, including Biles and silver medalist Raisman, to compete on a final apparatus. The women's floor exercise highlights the gymnastics program, and get this, that competition is underway as I speak. That's right, right now at the Rio Olympic Arena. You know how NBC rolls. They will actually air that event, which is taking place right now, so you'll probably already know who won the event in just a second here, but they will air that event tonight around 8 p.m., okay? Medals will also be awarded in boxing, canoe and kayak, cycling, diving, equestrian, sailing, weightlifting, and wrestling on a busy day out in Rio, okay? The women's soccer semis will be contested with host Brazil meeting Sweden. That took place at noon, actually, in Canada, taking on Germany a little bit less than an hour from now. Beach volleyball enters semifinal play with Larissa and Talita of Brazil taking on Germany's Laura Ludwig and also Kira Walkenhorst. That takes place at 3 p.m. And a gold will be handed out in the men's 3-meter springboard. As I mentioned, the finals will start at 5 p.m. The highlight of the evening, track and field program, that begins at 7:30 p.m., is the 110-meter hurdle finals, where University of Oregon wide receiver Devon Allen is among the favorites, along with Jamaican's Omar McLoy. Medals will also be given out in the men's high jump and women's 1500, where Ethiopia's Gazibi Diabia is the favorite. Track and field's evening session also features women's javelin, women's long jump qualifying, the men's and women's 400-meter hurdle semis, and women's 200-meter semis as well. Americans Tori Bowie, Deja Stevens, Daphne Schippers of the Netherlands are the ones to watch for in the 200. So that wraps up that chat. Isaac, I want to throw it to you now because Allyson Felix, I'm pretty sure you tuned into this. Allyson Felix, she now becomes the most decorated women's track and field athlete of all time. She took silver, though, in that race last night. And I talked about how Shaunae Miller, she had the lead. And Allyson comes out of nowhere. She's right on Miller's left. I feel like Miller sensed Allyson's presence. And you know what? She just dove for it. And it ended up working. There was a lot of controversy. I went online and there were a lot of people saying she shouldn't. It was funny because there were a lot of jokes that were cracked, actually. They were like, Shaunae Miller wins the gold. In what event? Diving? And yeah. I thought that was probably the most clever one. That's an easy one, right? But what do you think about Miller diving and Allyson, you know, just staying upright and taking home the silver?
I like the dive. Maybe it's not in the sportsmanship and the classic written in rules of the game, but at the same time, it shouldn't be. That's what makes these events so entertaining. We saw something earlier in this year where not gold medalist, yellow jersey winner of the Tour de France, Chris Froome, had to get off his bike, and he had to run up the mountain because his bike broke down.
Right.
He was just running. It was one of the most inspirational things ever. And technically, it was against the rules. This isn't even against the rules. This is just something which is an irrepressible desire to win. And when somebody is this focused, this dedicated, and this devoted to their success, their quest for excellence, you give it to them. I absolutely loved it. As a former track athlete, somebody who ran, I've always thought about doing this myself if it ever came down to being that close. But it never did. And gosh, the brush burn she reserved or received because of this, yeah. I hope they were well worth it. And I sure think they do.
Yeah, exactly, right? And, you know, it's interesting because if you've trained pretty much all your life for a moment like this, right, you're trying to win a gold medal. Winning a gold medal, that signifies, that symbolizes the creme de la creme of sports. And you are that close to it. Again, I've always said, Nick, there is nowhere in the rule book that says that you can't dive across the finish line, all right? If it's going to help me accomplish that feat, you better believe I am diving head first over that finish line. I understand there's a lot of, and I think the criticism comes from a lot of Allyson Felix fans out there that wanted to see history, her win another gold medal. At the same time, Miller, hey, she did nothing wrong here, all right? At the end of the day, it's all about winning. There are no rules against it, so do it. Simple as that. So, wow. We've made it, though, folks. We have made it the final minute here on the show where we have to say goodbye. And it's funny. I'm watching here. My good friend Jeff Plum says, hey, Al, no coughing in the studio. Always say, thank goodness for this cough button here because, yeah, for those watching on Facebook, I'm coughing up a storm, all right? But when I'm doing it, I have the cough button here on deck, so you can't hear it across the airways. But I'm going to try and get better as the day proceeds. We'll be back at it tomorrow, same time, same place. Much thanks to Kyle Austin for joining us from MLive to talk some MSU football today. Again, Meet the Spartans taking place starting at 5 p.m. tonight. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on here, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Have a fantastic afternoon and be easy, people.